Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. This classic episode was produced by the team at Pandora. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to QLS Classic Episode 42 with pioneering adult actress Heather Hunter from July 2017. What can I say? The name holds holy for a certain generation. Heather Hunter shares a story from life working as a coat-check girl at the fabled legendary Latin Quarter nightclub to blazing trails in Hollywood and the world of porn as the first black woman really allowed in spaces others have yet to navigate or get to in their life. She also gets older and wiser and tells about her experience after porn as a photographer, as a director, as a singer. So many stories she has to share. This was quite a memorable episode with Heather Hunter on QLS Classic. Hope you like it.
Stop making me laugh.
Don't forget
We're
going
to meditate.
Don't
just
forget
breathing.
About my watch.
Just breathing.
Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
Strange things keep happening.
Yeah.
I gotta say.
Yeah.
About 30 pals begged me to intern specifically today.
Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
My name is Fonte.
Yeah.
You understand.
Yeah.
Heather Hunter made me a man.
Roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
My name is Sugar.
Yeah.
I know our guest.
Yeah.
We used to live together.
What?
At the Riverbank West.
Roll call.
That's true.
Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
I am Boss Bill.
Yeah.
Used to be up in church.
Yeah.
This here episode.
Yeah.
Was fun to research.
Roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
It's Laia.
Yeah.
Some reason it's moist.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Heather.
Wait a minute. Wait, what?
Boys and girls rejoice.
Roll call. Suprema roll call.
I got a Suprema.
Suprema roll call.
Heather.
Yeah.
And I think Quest put me to a test.
Yes.
I don't know bars, but I give blowjobs.
Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll job. Suprema. Suprema roll job.
Blowjobs.
Well, thank you very much. That was our show for the day on behalf of.
Laia, you've been waiting all day to say that.
Wow. So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting episode of Questlove Supreme. I am your host, Amir Thompson, a.k.a. Top Daddy Love.
What?
And with me today is Team Supreme. At the helm, we have Fonte, a.k.a. Carolina Cushion.
Yes, indeed. Built for comfort, not for
speed. Oh, these are our porn names. Okay.
I mean, no, you're just Carolina Cushion today, okay. You know. Next to him is our boom operator, Sugar Steve, a.k.a. Miracle Mandel, a.k.a. Oil of Oy Vey.
Wow. That's a mouthful.
That took me a second. I got it.
Sorry. Well, you know, my jokes don't fly sometimes.
And
we have our director. Next to him is our director, Bill, a.k.a. Indiana Slick Smoke.
Slick Smoke. I'm just glad you didn't say Indiana Bones.
Indiana Bones.
Indiana Bones.
That's a good one. And next to him is our first lady, Laia, a.k.a. Sweet Pea Pinky Toe.
How you gonna shoot me in my pinky toe?
Well, last time you was Clyde, so, you know, I had to.
I want to be the Sweet Pea Pinky Toe.
No, Steven, you can't be that. Last but not least, ladies and gentlemen, our guest today is, I got to say, all about history. She's pretty much had the best seat in the house, literally from watching the classic age of hip-hop unfold in real time, the hip-hop that's affected our lives as a key staff member of the Latin Quarter nightclub, which, as you know, if you're a listener of the show, we cannot stop nerding out about. Of course, the Latin Quarter nightclub that made stars out of luminaries like Public Enemy, Boogie Down Productions, Salt-N-Pepa, Latifah, many others. Even to our place in history, As an AVN Hall of Famer, I have to say.
What's the AVN?
The AVN.
What's AVN
Google
stand for?
That. No, I believe it's the Adult Video Network.
Adult Video Network.
Oh, the AVN. Now I know. Yes, I watch those awards. Okay.
Yeah. But, oh, those are the only awards you watch?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Showtime.
Well, she's one of the most celebrated actresses in the adult video genre. She's also a radio host, a recording artist, an art photographer, and many more that we're going to find out today. We are going to get to know Heather Hunter on Questlove Supreme. So wait. Before we ask you anything, Steve, what the hell was up with your voice? What do you mean y'all lived together?
Yeah.
What's the name of that place?
It's the Riverbank West.
The Riverbank West,
Riverbank. Everybody lived
there. Is
that
a building and that's an apartment?
It's 43rd and 11th in Hell's Kitchen over there.
And, even Fat Fry Freddy, he used to live in the same building.
It was a new building when we were there. It was like 91, 92 right. or something like that.
Uh-huh. And, a great building.
Yeah, it's great. Really
incredible.
Nice.
Incredible.
I don't expect you to remember me, but I had a Dalmatian back then, and you might remember I was the only person there with a Dalmatian in the elevator. And
yeah, during my Riverbank days, party. Yeah. I was a party queen.
Well, you should have knocked on my fucking door.
Steve was at home alone. Building. It was crazy. Oh, my God. They kicked me out of the building for too many parties. Yeah.
Damn, how many parties is there?
Okay. We had the best doorman.
What floor were you on?
I was on the 43rd floor.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I was on 23.
Wait, is this when you were... This is before Electric Lady, so...
Yeah, this is 5 years before I met...
You were even an engineer?
It was like 91, 92. Yeah, I was right out of college.
What kind of money?
Right?
No, I had two roommates in a one bedroom. It's all good.
All right.
I'm not rich.
Anyway, so Heather, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So I know this is one of these shows in which I wanted to be absolutely, not even willfully, but absolutely ignorant because I want to find out these things in real time. So you're from, I know that you're from the Bronx.
I was born in the Bronx, but I was raised in Harlem and Brooklyn. So when I lived in Brooklyn, that's really mostly when, downtown Brooklyn, you had Albee Square Mall.
Right.
So, Square Mall.
Yeah, so I used to hang out in Albee Square Mall. All of us used to. So,
did you know Haitian Jack?
I knew Haitian Jack. I knew everybody. I used to have lunch with me and Biz Markie. We used to share the same lunch table all the time.
I hear that at Albee Square Mall. Every hip-hop luminary tells me that Haitian Jack did his best work at the Albee Square Mall. For those of you, I believe that Haitian Jack in hip-hop folklore was one of the Jesse James of people were telling me that he had a collection of everyone's chain that he ever vic, like Slick Rick's chain and
there was cats that collect. It was even the Lee Patches back then.
Really?
Yeah, back in the day.
Run them Lee Patches.
Yeah, you mean rip them off the back of the jeans?
Yeah, you said rip the back off the jeans. It was crazy.
What?
Doing crazy stuff, you know?
She was
collect
real.
Those as well. Yeah, but inside Albee Square, literally, it was like a melting pot of talented people that were going to birth from hip-hop. It was, that was like our lunchtime. Everybody was down there. We would just have lunch. Some of us would be cutting school. Mm-hmm. But it was really more like, we're all down there doing music. We're creating.
Right.
So if we were freestyling, people were dancing. We drove.
So born in the Bronx.
Yeah.
Raised in Harlem, but really grew up in Brooklyn.
Right.
Okay.
And grew up in Harlem, too.
What school did you go to?
Pass around. I went to, in the city, when I was younger, I went to Catholic school. So I was at Pelletier. But then I went to Fashion Industries High School. I got kicked out of there as well because I was doing too much graffiti. So, I was just tagging up all the walls.
And kicked out of everywhere.
What was your tag name?
Miss 45.
Really?
Yeah, I was in a crew called the Kraftwerk Kids back in the day. Yeah. So I used to tag with everybody on a train. I used to go down Hoyt and Skimmerhorn, jump on the tracks, go into the train yard.
So tag. Real New York?
Real New York. Real.
For real?
For real, man.
You tagged up trains?
Everything. My name would be everywhere. Yeah. I was rolling back then during the same era of B.O. with the dot in the middle. Lady Pink.
Lady Pink?
Dynamite 149. So I was in a crew of Kraftwerk Kings. We created.
So it's like the Wild Style days.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Did you ever have any, like, scary spit moments? Was it spit?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I had crazy
Well, that was
moments.
Beat Street. That's what I was. But still, yeah.
You know, chased from the cops on the yards. Literally, thrown everything. Had to clean trains. Never stopped.
So how does one... Oh, man, we're killing so many birds with the stone here. Because how would one get... Well, I know now, like, security wasn't as heavy back then as it was now.
Right.
I mean, now you can't even... You know, you stand in front of the turnstile a second and like five cops run up to you. But like, how does one even like even manage to go inside the tunnels to without being watched?
Well, back in the days in the 80s, 90s, all there was like that little gate. But we would just jump right onto the track. As long as you didn't touch the third rail, you were good. And at Hoyt and Skimmerhorn, that's where all the trains would be sitting. The C, the D, you know, A. And those are really the numbers I was tagging.
What was it about that particular spot? Because I also know that
everybody went there.
Well, when Michael Jackson shot the Bad video,
right.
They shot at Hoyt and Skimmerhorn. Like, everyone's like, that's where you got to shoot. That's the realest.
Because that was really, that's to me, that's where street art, whenever you jumped on a train, that's where all graffiti artists, they had this, something about Hoyt and Skimmerhorn, that's where you would go. At least, and then there's another yard up in the Bronx. Mm-hmm. But I didn't, since I was in Brooklyn, I was always tagging in Brooklyn.
So was it still regional to the point where it's like Brooklyn people didn't mess with, you wouldn't go past your neighborhood or
oh, yeah,
were
we'd
you
be,
free to?
I mean, fighting, tagging on each other's different crews' names, then you fighting, all that. It was crazy.
Really?
I was a real tomboy. I'm still a tomboy, but there's a, you know, I've grown into a lady, as you would say.
Absolutely.
You know, but it's that tomboy and it's a heart, you know, it's in me. But it's amazing. If I think about the stuff I did when I was younger, I would not be jumping on no train tracks now. It was like, God, I can't believe I did that. But I was expressing every day you would go to school and you get on the train, your name was there. It was a beautiful thing. It was like you see your piece of art just flying through. And that was really the only way we could express ourselves. And then when I got in trouble and I had to clean the trains, that's when I was put in a program with Keith Haring. And Keith Haring stopped me from tagging on trains. And I was working more on my black book and then I started painting. So,
really?
Yeah.
Damn. So you knew Keith Haring.
He's ready to crack his whack.
And it's crazy because I was like so, most of the kids that were in his class, you know, it was because we were, you know.
So he was a teacher?
No, he had a program for juvenile delinquents, that's what they call it.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
That could not stop, you know, his program was really to help kids understand and create themselves, create art, not on defacing property, but really showing another platform where you can kind of express yourself. And it worked for me.
Okay.
It really did.
So Ed Koch developed an anti-graffiti kind of, so you had to clean the trains?
I had to clean trains.
Damn. How do you get that off a train? What did they give you?
Back then, there was two different ways you had to do it. Before, it was like this chemical stuff, and we had to scrub, you know. And then it got to a point where they had the sand blowers, the paint remover blowers.
Oh, yeah, the blasters.
Yeah, the blasters.
Ooh, it's way past DD7.
It would at least about 10 of us in the, you know, cleaning trains. At least I remember when I was cleaning trains.
So when you were younger, you had aspirations to be an artist or a designer?
Well, I knew I could dance. I loved hip-hop. Mm-hmm. I loved music. I just knew I was creative, so I was trying to express myself in any form as possible. And just like anybody else who's an artist, you know, you want to get your stuff out there. So,
were you there at the park jams? Any notable ones of memory, at least in the Bronx or in Brooklyn? I don't know, like, Brooklyn's true history. I know about Queens and the Bronx.
Most of the jams were mostly because I lived in Fort Greene.
Okay.
So I lived on the other side of Fort Greene from the Fort Greene Projects. So a lot of jams happened with us within Fort Greene Projects. So that was pretty much like my life in it. But if I can't, you know, my God, I got in so much trouble in that park, let alone just blowjobs. But I got into trouble. You know what I mean?
That early? Are we at blowjobs already? Yeah. Did they start there?
I'm sorry. You know, doing it in a park, doing Fort Greene Park. Oh, yeah. That was right.
That was Rock Creek Park.
It was Rock Creek. Same thing.
Same thing.
That was a very freaky park. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Fort Greene Park.
Yeah, so.
But Oh, Dirty Bass, it was so funny. Like, if I think about just where I grew up, you know, because they were in Fort Greene Project. So I lived on the other side where you consider like Crooklyn, you know, like the movie Crooklyn.
Right.
So whenever I would like date somebody in the projects, oh my God, I had to fight so many girls to get over to the projects. So I knew for so long of being so young, I knew Oh, Dirty Bastard for a very long time. So when I got into porn later in life, oh my God. Oh my God, he would chase me everywhere. And I love OD. That was my boy.
Right.
But it blew his mind. You know, I think a lot of people from the hip hop industry that are pioneers now, because we all grew up together. So right. To see me take a different direction and then realize that was me later.
Yeah, I was saying, did you take a 180 where I assume that you didn't look the guy, like you really have not aged a bit since I first seen you. So I'm just saying that the image that we have of Heather Hunter, you know, the goddess Heather Hunter, was that not your image when you were in your teens? You were more tomboyish?
Yeah, but I had that image, but then I guess it was just oozing sexuality from me. You know, I had this energy, I guess. I wore a flat top. I rocked a Shilly E haircut. You know, I was in my own little vibe, but for some strange reason, I ooze sexuality.
Was it like a moment? Was there like a moment? Do you remember? Because you said you were tagging, you were tomboy.
Yeah.
So were you still had that sexual inside you
It was when my boobs started growing. Okay. Guys started looking at me differently.
Okay.
And things started different.
Puberty.
You know?
Like
puberty.
I know it.
But, you know, I think my traumatic moment took me a left turn and I went into the streets. I kind of ran away. So most of the people that were still doing music and focusing, I was really kind of trying to find my way of what I wanted to do.
What was your traumatic moment?
I got raped. That was actually the first time I lost my virginity. So that kind of, from that moment when you're in this childhood and impact like that happens to you, you kind of get lost in translation in every form of which direction, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think after that situation, I think any woman that, or anybody who ever gets raped, the most important thing is to take control of it and really find a way to empower yourself
and own
through
it. Right.
So I went into the sex business. I went into the adult business because I had all control. It was at that point I could control every man that anything he desired or woman, you know, it was just really what I wanted versus what they wanted.
Was it in between the traumatic event and you going into the industry? Was there any like love situation? Like, did you fall off of somebody? Did you get the love making process?
No, I was searching through the love through the adult business because I started stripping at the age of 16. So that's what makes it deep about Latin Quarters, because when I was running away, I didn't have a place to stay. And there was this guy, I used to go to Latin Quarters at that time, you know, always Latin Quarters. And I realized I needed to stay somewhere. And Mr. Goldberg, God bless his soul, the owner of Latin Quarters, he really took me in, him and Eddie Bell. He rests in peace. Eddie Bell was a great boy,
okay,
one of my best friends. And he was like, okay, you're always hanging out here. Let's give you a job. And Eddie Bell introduced me to Goldberg, and immediately he took a liking to me. And I started being the coat check girl and working a door at Latin Quarters. Sometimes I was, the guest list girl.
Right.
Definitely mostly a coat check girl. But then it got to the point where I started working for Mr. Goldberg in his office.
Okay.
Because he also co-managed, if I can remember, David Copperfield. There was something of a business.
That's like,
man, yeah.
Super random.
Yeah, it's very weird. It's like he had some management business with somebody else with David Copperfield.
Okay.
So all the calls would come in. I would take the calls. Things would happen like that. But then he realized I didn't have a place to stay.
I was wondering, like, if ever one night he was just like, yeah, stop by the club one night.
Nah, I wound up living in Latin quarters for least two months.
So you literally lived there. I've heard that everyone says, like, yeah, Heather used to live there. And I didn't know that you literally
lived there. I did, like, an apartment with a kitchenette.
No, people don't realize about Latin quarters because, you know, upstairs and going up towards the attic, Latin quarters, if I can remember the history, used to be like this beautiful, like, cabaret club back in the days.
Mm-hmm.
Restaurant cabaret club. I think it was even ran very, I think, Italian mafia. I don't know if I can remember the history, but when you went upstairs in the attic area of Latin quarters, it was like going into the 1930s. Like, it was beautiful. Like, the furniture, it was stuff that you would see, like, in a cotton club back in the days, one of those roaring 30s and 40s. Mm-hmm. And it was so untouched. Like, and you could feel the spirits and the haunting of the place, you know? Because I stayed there. It was really spooky sometimes at night. Because then I heard a couple of history after I heard about Latin quarters was something back in the day, some lady passed away on stage, you know? Just the history, this I was hearing about Latin
back quarters. Back in the salsa jazz days.
Yeah, salsa jazz days. So a lot of people stayed there. The security guard used to look out for me there.
Okay.
I can't remember his name. He's such a good man.
So when Paradise and those guys started, I guess the first party was Celebrity Tuesdays, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when they started those nights, I'm not weirded out because I guess the same people that tell me these stories of, quote, back in the day.
Right.
Are also the same people that today, 30 years later, have sort of dismayed eye of New York now, like it's gentrified and, you know, 42nd Street's all Disney-fied and tourist out and not as hip as it used to be.
Right.
But, you know, I have to, I mean, as a person, I grew up an extremely sheltered childhood. So to me, it's like none of you were worried about the danger element of that nightclub. Not even the owner. Like the owner wasn't at all like worried about like any danger element happening. You know,
because it was danger every night.
Yeah, pretty much.
Every other night, it could be nice if we had a good night. You know, it would be a point where...
So good night would be what? Like no one got
no fatalities.
Beat up?
Nobody got beat up, but then you see gold chains flying in the air because somebody yanked the gold chain off of somebody.
Can I ask you something?
They would throw it to their boy on the other side so you could see it from the DJ booth. Somebody get yanked.
They throw it to somebody.
But sometimes at the end of the night, it was great because at the end of the night... After it was time to clean up, she would be gold. You got weaves, you got hair extensions on the floor. You got stuff that you were like, but you were coming up. I mean, there was bamboo earrings, you know.
Let me interject. I'm going to do a very special version of, for 1 second. When you hear this, what is the very first thing you think of? Now, I've heard people tell me about this, but when you hear this, what's the first thing you think of? So, Daddy-O told me what I didn't know. Now, this is weird. Now, as a member of a hip-hop band, this is my calling card. Like, a classic hip-hop song.
Yes.
No. No.
What's the word on it?
When this shit was played at the Latin Quarter, you instantly...
Oh, yeah, that was like...
You had to tuck your chain in. Yeah.
Yes.
Whenever anyone... Like, for people, when they hear that roll, it's a traumatic thing.
What song is that?
Oh, wow. It's Ghost Stetsa. That's in case there's a band from Brooklyn...
I'm not asking
Bill.
For me,
man. I know, Bill.
Ghost Stetsa by Stetsa
Ghost
Sonic.
Ghost Stetsa by Stetsa
Thank
Sonic.
You. Thank
so,
you.
When that drum roll happens... I found out that it's traumatic to some New Yorkers because that would mean
they got robbed.
You were about to get robbed if your chain was stolen.
You definitely had to buck up. There were certain songs that would go off in the night and you would just know this is what turns them up, you know? And
And yet y'all still played them.
And we still played them.
And you went. So at no point was your life in danger or anything? Well, you had
me personally, no, because everybody protected me. Everyone in there. Like literally between Paradise, Lumumba. I had from the X-Clan to Professor X. Yeah, mm-hmm. Even my boy from Public Enemy. Everybody, Teddy Ted, all of them, they all were like my big brothers. No one dared not to touch me. This is a one crazy experience. Mm-hmm. I was working a door, and this is when LL Cool J first came out. You know?
Okay.
Love L. Let's mm-hmm. start off with this. And I told L later, because he didn't realize it was me, you know?
Right.
But this is when L just came out. He had his radio. He was looking fly. You know, he was at his peak, you know? And Latin Quarter's security was not something to mess with, you know what I mean? They really didn't care who you were. They were going to stomp you out. If there was a problem, they did not care. It was the most toughest security. There's no security like LQ security today.
Oh, really?
Hands down, no. So
how many of it was him?
Sometimes it would be like outside. It's so crazy because it'd be like three or four outside, but by the time something pop off, there's like 10 people out there. They're like 10 dudes stomping on somebody or even other people from the club that work at the club. It was just madness. Right. It was so madness, but for some strange reason, you felt at peace. I can't explain it because it was like a chaotic church, you know? You know, there was something very special about the place, but then there was something very dark too, you know?
Right.
It had this, definitely this double-edged sword when it came to, because there was so much talent in that place.
Right.
Like, I would be on a dance floor with Salt and Pepper, UTFO, like everybody, Queen Latifah, mm-hmm. Light, all of us on the floor. And everybody know they're talented and they're special, you know? But it's like, you would never know, like, to see where everybody is catapulted to now is a beautiful thing. But you could feel that everybody in that club was going to turn into something, was going to be something.
So what happened with LL?
LL actually came up to me. He, you know, he's just being LL.
Yo, what's up? And not me.
He was all in my face. And, and at that time, I was dating one of the security dudes, the head of security. And he was just blah, 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 blah. And it was like, I was like, back up. And it was just kind of crazy. And then I just flipped and I said, security.
Oh, shit.
And that's all I had to say whenever it was at that point. And as soon as I know, L was out the club. You know?
You got LL he was out the club.
The club, okay. You know? Mm-hmm. And then later, years later, when I became, quote unquote, Heather Hunter, and years later, I saw L and I told L, I was like, do you remember me? And he was like, wait, so I was from Latin Quarters. He's like, nah, I don't. I said, do you remember, girl, when you had a, you only got kicked out of Latin Quarter once. He was like, oh. He was like, oh my God, that was you.
Wow.
And so I was like, oh my God.
So was he trying to holler? Like, was he trying to holler?
Yeah, he was trying to holler. But then after, you know, it was, and you got to, but you got to think about it. He's LL. Every girl wanted LL back then.
Oh, he was coming strong.
But
strong.
I was a different type of chick. And then my man worked. He was the head of security.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I was a young girl. And I, you know, like I said, all you had to do is say security in there with me. It was this, okay, the most remarkable moment I can remember of Latin Quarters is when Public Enemy performed.
Really?
Oh, my God.
I'll say, you're probably the only person that has a positive view of this,
because
even Chuck himself was like, it took us two times to get it right.
It was so intense, it threw everybody off.
Right.
And I think at that time, to me, their presentation, everything that what Public Enemy stand for, and mm-hmm. just their stage presence was, to me, gripping, you know? And I think, you know, there was always conflict. Oh, no, that's, you know, everybody has conflict of what they thought was hot on stage because they weren't on stage.
Right.
Everybody was getting the opportunity to be on stage, you know?
Yeah. Well, let me ask this. Can you describe Melly Mel's?
I knew it.
Can you describe Melly Mel? Because again, in all my research of Latin Quarter folklore, Melly Mel is, if the Latin Quarters were the Muppets, then
yeah, he's Waldorf
like,
and
Waldorf
Statler.
Waldorf and Statler, like the two guys in the balcony that were like super grumpy.
Yeah.
Like, were they like the first guys in the club and the last few guys to leave? Or like, what was their presence in that club?
Well, it's so funny. Between Grandmaster Flash, Mr. Broadway, all of them. To me, it was just funny because, like, back then, that era, and especially with hip-hop, it seemed like they were, every artist was dressing like a male stripper. You know what I mean? Because they,
I mean. They were, though. They were. It was like, male strippers are like another member of Earth, Wind & Fire.
Yes. Like, yeah. And it was like, everybody came out to shine. So, yeah, everybody stayed to the end. Some people would leave before the end because that's when a lot of things would pop off at the end of the night.
Last song, gotta be out.
Yeah, and those lights would come on and off, on and off, on and off throughout the night. Music would shut up, something happened, lights back on, lights back off, music still going. But I used to date Mr. Broadway, and I used to laugh because now if I think about it, he used to wear these little purple tights, you know,
right.
Pants, and you
it
look
was still at the 80s.
It was still the '80s, you know.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And to me that time and era, there's nothing like it. I've never experienced anything like that club before.
Was there a historic hip hop occurrence or something that you remember where it was just that besides Public Enemy? Like, was there one moment where you felt? I mean, because a lot of things historically happened there. Right. I think what hammered. Got booed there and
booed, yeah.
Vowed revenge. I just found out that Kid and Play also, their initial group.
I can't remember
so
the name
good
either.
To stump you too.
I remember. Like, I remember.
I'm not,
I can't
I'm not
call
even going
to
fact check it myself. I just love the fact that you two are caught. No, you're not going to find it on Google. Bill.
Is it too hype?
It's like high energy or something like that.
No, it's something. But as that incarnation, they got booed. And then came back as Kid and Play. Okay. Who were the IOU dancers?
I was in the IOU. I was the only girl in the IOU.
Really? So what was it? Like, y'all were just a clique of dancers that...
I forced myself in that group.
Really?
I really did. And then even with Rocksteady Crew, because Crazy Legs used to teach me how to dance. So I would be on a dance floor with Crazy Legs. But they were all-boy group, dance crews, a lot of dance crews back then. And IOU was the best. They would dance a lot for mostly the artists' background. And then they would do like different segments in between the shows. So they were pretty much like the house dancers, dance crew of Latin Quarters.
Yeah, here like every week they would invent, they literally invented everything from Cabbage Patch to
everything.
The Reebok to, you know, the Kid and Play, the Fila. Like,
oh, wow.
They literally invented every dance that you see and then, you know, It made it national. So what, do you remember the last night of the club? Like, what ended the Latin Quarter?
Honestly, it was really about Goldberg was selling it, you know? He had to sell it. He was just going on for his own. From that point, I was in the adult world at that point.
What year was that?
Oh, God.
Around what time was that?
I think I was by 19.
Okay.
19 years old. 18, 19.
So 89.
18.
90.
Yeah, 18. That's when I was gone because that's when I went to LA. But yeah, after my 18th, 19th, that's when it started changing over. The point you made before, the most special, at least to me, was the most special night about Latin Quarters was when Scott LaRock's Awake. That was the most peaceful, touching night that I could ever remember of Latin Quarters. Like, everyone came at peace. Everybody was, it was just one of those moments that you would never, ever forget. You know what I mean?
Right.
And even people in there, you could just feel like, you know, we need to do better.
Right.
You know?
I heard that, I guess, Paradise kind of wanted to change the, Paradise was the,
the promoter, right?
Yeah, the promoter.
Yeah, Paradise
looked
after me.
Of the Celebrity Tuesdays. Was it always on a Tuesday or any other nights?
It was on Tuesdays, but then there was always private events sometime. I was there mostly when I was working there. I was always there like five days a week.
No, Celebrity Tuesday was on a Saturday, actually.
No, but
what
I just
other night would it be on?
No, I'm not asking was Celebrity Tuesdays on Tuesday. I just meant were hip hop nights only on Tuesday
night. Yeah, then we had Sunday, if I believe. I can remember, I think Sunday as well.
Fucking Fonte trying to buck a shot at me on my own goddamn show, mother.
It's your man throwing you shade.
Man, cut his mic off for 5 minutes.
Oh, Bill pulling them shades.
It's your boss.
Oh, he made you do it.
No, I didn't make him do it.
He made me do it.
No, hell no.
Yes, but well, he's the answer. I meant, was hip hop night only on Tuesdays?
I'm in charge of sarcasm anyway. I don't know what the hell these guys are.
That's funny.
Well, yeah, what I meant to ask was I heard that Paradise implemented more the Afrocentric phase of where hip hop was going to. Mm-hmm. With the medallions, with Bimbada's presence there, with the Zulu presence, that he was actually responsible for that and was kind of trying to phase out the gold chain violent side of hip hop due to Scott's death, and now was trying to implement more Afrocentricity, which is pretty much how
X-Clan.
Yeah,
X-Clan
like,
was
Paradise, was he a producer for X-Clan? Like, I mean, he wasn't one of the MCs.
Paradise, between Paradise with Mr. Goldberg, he handled a lot of stuff for him to handle. He banished a lot of stuff. And then he was a promoter. There was a few promoters in there. Yeah, also, but you know, you had Red Alert and Special K and Teddy Ted. They were mostly the regular DJs in there. But yeah, between Paradise was the man.
Okay.
He was the guy. And he really, that's like my big brother.
Is he still alive?
Oh yeah, definitely. Okay. He just wrote a book. He just put out a photography book. No half stepping. There you go.
Okay. I've seen this. Gotcha.
But it's one thing. Can I tap on something that's so different between now versus the Latin Quarter era with the girls in a club, you know?
What is it?
As when I was growing up in the club, even the genres, even light, salt, all of them can even definitely can relate to this. Mm-hmm. We were B-girls. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it seems like the B-girl had that era versus now. We had so much respect. They treated us like, they gave us respect, the men in hip-hop. Mm-hmm. It was like, they put you on a pedestal. Versus now, it's not like that, you know? And my whole thing is like bringing something back. I really wish I could bring back the B-girl essence, you know? And make men and hip-hop recognized that versus in the 80s and 90s, how they treated girls. I mean, it's so different now.
I wish they could bring back hip-hop.
Period.
Yeah, it's bad because, you know, my God.
You know,
I'm so happy I was a B-girl.
So when you graduated New York, or did you, when did you feel that you were outgrowing New York? Like, what called you to Los Angeles?
Porn.
Oh.
Don't avoid it. Just get in it. Don't avoid it. Just get in it.
Wait, what are you talking about? What are you talking about?
I was talking about you. I was like, just get out the Latin Quarter and go into the, because that's where she went. That's where she went.
Right. Yeah, and then when I got back, it was a tunnel. You know, things just changed.
And it was different. Wow, yeah.
It's a different
era. It went from
That was my era.
It went from Irving Plaza to tunnel. And things were changing now, you know? And so, that was my era, too, because I did a lot. I was a promoter a lot for Tunnel. Yeah.
What didn't you do?
So let's tackle that issue, as Laia says. All right, so you go to Los Angeles. Like, how do you get into the industry? How does one get into the industry? Especially when the time period that you were in the industry, you know,
racist.
I'm certain that porn is probably one of the most racist cultures of all time. Right. Like, I mean, the titles I was seeing was like, again, like fried chicken and fucking and all that. Like, all the stuff in my, no, like,
nah, I got you. Yeah, nah.
My uncle had like some fried chicken. Like Ray Victory and barbecue
no, sure.
volume 3. Like,
it's very true.
It was, yeah. So, how do you navigate your way to the status that you became? Because as far as I'm concerned, like, you were, at least from my point of view, you kind of were equal billing of the white actresses of the time.
Right.
On covers, yeah. And you weren't doing like super derogatory shit.
It was because I had a really good manager. He had a magical idea when we kicked me off.
The magical idea was like, let's treat you with dignity.
Yeah. It was more or less, let's not tell them what your color skin is. Mm. We're going to put your first movie out and it's going to be Heather. And it was like, we're going to ignore that
but
you're
eventually
they were
going to see you,
no,
though, right?
No, no, no. I'm saying as in when you're doing promo, before you're doing promo to put out for adult, like promo goes out. So the whole team was like throwing out Heather, Heather. And then my face was shown. And then that's when I started standing up for everything.
But what's promo in the adult world?
Back then, promo in adult world was like, okay, AVN, when you had the AVNs back then. Mm-hmm. So they would get flyers, you would promote things. It was mostly like street teaming stuff, you know?
Okay.
And then, you know, the internet was only created for porn back then. So if you were on the internet at that time, you knew exactly what was going on, at least in the adult world, you know? And then I stood up for every right from there on. I refused to be treated. I want to be treated no matter what color my skin is. So I really stood up. I broke through a lot of color barriers. I stayed to my convictions. And it's really about knowing your worth and sticking to it, you know?
How old were you when you did your first movie?
18.
You were 18.
I did it on my birthday.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was
When is your birthday?
October 1st.
Okay. Libra.
Libra.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's good
fuck,
shit.
Man.
What was that experience like, just your first time on camera?
Oh, it was crazy. It was really crazy because I realized how wild the people were in the business. You know what I mean? And I was like, wow, this is crazy. It seemed like I danced through it.
Okay.
Like I was kind of like an out of body experience, you know?
Mm-hmm. Did you know what to expect? Like,
I had no clue. Okay. And then when this girl pulled out this, back then there was really no dildo. She pulled out one of these big massage. One of those huge massage vibrators.
Oh, from Spencer's. Or,
God.
Yes,
or, that was actually the first time I actually was with a woman was on camera. It was the first time. The very first time.
So yeah. The first time was with the girl. It wasn't with the guy. It was...
No,
it was
a guy, but it was my first time actually having a girl.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I mean, I was attracted to girls, but it was my first time really going all the way in.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So, I mean, how are you not self-conscious about it? Like, I'm pretty sure that some part of porn is scientific, as in, okay, stop, cut, we need this angle right here, and and, you know, there's no manual to guide you through that or any training. So how do you got to catch on quick and then
honestly I say, you know, that's why the difference between now, how everybody's really over top with their sexuality and not really understanding it. When you're in the porn business, you really have to be a professional. You have to have that professional state of mind, because if you don't and you just dip in, you can lose it along the way, you know what I mean?
Really?
So, could lose it a long way. So you have to already be a natural freak. I think it has to be already in you. Have no inhibitions, you know, comfortable with sexuality.
But did you know how much of a freak you were, like, at that age?
Yeah.
Because you still had to become more of a freak. You know what I mean? Like, 18 freak, Heather, is different than 10 years later.
I'm more freakier now, but I'm a domestic freak now. I got a man, you know, I'm home, you know, got my, you know, but right. it's a different dynamic now. But I think the older you get more freakier, you know? Yeah.
Hope so.
Yeah. I'm looking at y'all.
I fully expect Laia to lead this conversation, but I'm sure. What is the difference between sex on camera and, or rather, how do you differentiate between sex on camera and, like you say, like domestic sex or sex
without
in real
the
life?
Sensitizing?
Yeah, like how do you
like, not?
how do you have, like, you, is it like you have a scene with somebody and it's like, oh, great job, and let's hook up later? Or is it just a line, it's like, that was that, and now we're done?
Well, that's the thing. When I was in porn, I only dated porn stars, male porn stars.
Makes sense.
Is that
I wouldn't date somebody out. I call y'all civilians. I wouldn't
date a civilian. Yeah, I was going to say.
I wouldn't
date
a civilian.
I've been called a civilian a lot, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't do it because honestly, I would like, why you want to date me? I'm doing porn, you know? Because I wouldn't want to date me, you know? So I had this thing now, date male porn stars. So yeah, I got to pick all my men because I work for Vivid. So it was, yeah, we would go from there and then we would have awkward sex in front of the camera and everybody telling you to do something. It's just like you can't even enjoy it. So you would go back into the bathroom after your scene was done and then y'all could actually have,
get it in
if y'all were together, if you felt like it.
So it is acting. How much of that is acting?
Oh, it's acting. It's hard.
How can you act when your body has to respond?
No, because it's like, okay, perfect example. I was watching a porn. I just had this discussion with somebody. I was just watching porn. And like I say, if I meet a guy when I was single, if I met a guy and he's like, wants to pound, pound. He's doing everything like a porno movie. And no, it's like, that ain't good. You know? No. It's not good because like when you're watching a porn, even when we're having sex on camera, we got to speed up so it looks exciting for the viewer. We have to do everything to make it look so exciting. And then when we're about exciting and into it, they like cut. Okay, we got to do this, turn the angle, go this way.
All right, stills.
Heather, da-da-da, you got to, you know. It
so we got a whole new generation that watches porn and repeats it. And
yeah.
And all right, okay.
And that ain't even that ain't how it need to go down.
Yeah,
I see.
Yeah, I know.
You sound so disappointed. Like,
that whole concept,
because they're professional. We're entertainers. That's what we're doing.
That's a problem. Men watch porn and they think sometimes that's like, no,
it's not that. Is
it,
you know?
Is it? I would imagine that for the male performer, it's almost there's a bigger pressure to instantly perform. Because, I mean, women can fake orgasms like nobody's business. Yeah.
But now they got Viagra. Like, in my era, it was hard. You know? Now the guys are just...
Well, yeah, I'm just saying, like, just, like, on cue. Like, okay, let's go. Yeah. Hurry up.
Yeah, Ray Victory, perfect example. He could not come unless you had red high heels on.
Shut it.
Yeah. He was banging so much, he could not come. He did not care who you were.
Right.
I remember I had a scene with him, and I had my little, you know, because I was so very girl next doory.
Right.
I had my little skippies on. He was like, uh-uh.
That ain't going to get it.
That ain't going to do it. That's not going to do it. They had to go get me red high heels.
I was going to say, I'm kind of... Like the yoga era of porn and this whole like,
what was the yoga era?
The yoga era. I mean they have different things. They have like it's always the same backup. Like it's either the pizza delivery scene.
Oh okay. Or, you mean the setup? Yeah,
now there's yoga class.
Or whatever.
in my head.
Yes.
I don't know. The sports gym look is not.
Oh, it's not hot.
It's not personally sexy to me.
Okay.
But, you know.
But love don't like
who
that.
Am I? Who am I?
Yo, isn't, just to get you out of your hole you're going into, isn't porn one of the only industries where the men, it's inequality between the men and the women in pay where the men get paid less? Or is that not
true?
Yeah,
the men get paid less. Certain guys. If you're a star guy, you could probably make more money than the girls. But if you're in gay porn, they make more money.
Well, yeah,
they make money just like the women. Yeah, so it's, you know, I have a lot of colleagues that are in the business that I've been out of the business for 28 years now. I've been retired. So it's been a long time. I kind of keep in touch with certain people I do like that's still in the business or like I like Misty Stone. I think she's a good person. So
are you mentoring Heather a little bit?
Huh?
Do you mentor a little bit?
My whole life is a mentor.
Well, that's true.
Every day
she's
get up.
She's mentoring us right now.
You know, my every day is, you know. It's interesting. What comes through my rings on my phone every day. Questions, everything. So I think the business itself, and I think people look at me, and I'm not anti-porn. You know, a lot of people think, wow, she's not in porn. She feels. My only view about porn is that I just really wish that they would practice safe sex.
Well, I was going to ask, like, how scary was it?
That bothered. Well, I left because I wasn't going to. I was wearing condoms anyway. As soon as that came about, I was wearing condoms. But after I did, I tell this all the time. When I did a movie in Hawaii for Vivid, and I was doing a scene in a non-erupting volcano. I was down inside the volcano with Vince somebody, Boyer. And I'm like, why am I down here? Because after taxes, it's not going to be worth it. Between my health, taxes, I can't do this no more. You know what I mean? I think I started growing up. You know, I started kind of waking up and realizing, you know, there's more things that are important, which is your health and making sure you stay on this earth, because that business is like going into war. You can come out a soldier unscathed, or you can come out and you could really die. You know what I mean?
How thorough are they as far as making sure that I have my papers and I'm tested? And like, is there someone always on the set that's like, okay, let me... And someone could lie about it. I forget, wasn't there a brother in Detroit?
Yeah.
I can't remember Brazil? His name. But yeah, was it Darren James? Was it him?
It sounds familiar. I just know that he went to Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
And he got infected. I know that the industry had to shut down for a month or so. Like, who are the police dogs that enforces that? And like, in the age that it is now
it's
imagine,
so crazy.
It's almost like, pull out your iPhone.
It's impossible to. I mean, you have your set companies that still do the protocol. You get tested every time you do a movie. These people still choose to, they don't want you to wear condoms, but if you want to, you have to really insist it. Sometimes you won't get hired because you just want to wear condoms. So I was with Vivid, so I was contract girl, so I was able to wear condoms if I choose to.
Was that the highest honor back then, like, to be a Vivid?
Like now.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, even to this day, to be a Vivid girl.
They're still
Vivid,
a thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Vivid, I mean, Kim and Ray J took them to another level, right? And then it just went... back up.
That was
there.
Vivid?
That was Vivid.
Right, right.
Wait, you said that with pride and alacrity. Like,
that was the empire built for like
I
several
know that
people.
Local
yeah, yeah. That was the Kardashian empire, yeah. And Mimi.
And I was proud to be a Vivid girl. I always will. It's something that I'm not going to forget of my life because they were a great company.
Were your peers as nice to you or that thing, or was it? Like, was it catty as far as...
Oh, no. The Vivid girls I was cool with. One, I punched in the face.
Who was that?
Who were you about to punch?
Oh, that's hilarious.
See, I just want to know what she did.
Yeah, it was one I punched in the face.
Who did you have to punch? Who was it?
I'm not going to say her.
Well,
What did you have to punch her?
Huh?
What'd she do?
We were all on set waiting for her. All the Vivid girls were on set waiting for her. I was really sick. And she decides that...
She showed up late.
She showed up like 4 hours late.
She a mirror jaw.
She went to go get her hair bleached. And I was sick. And then she came in just like, I could do whatever. What you going to do with it? I just socked her. I socked her.
What you going to do? Did she still do the scene afterwards?
Yeah, my Keisha came out and I socked her. And... Now,
you gotta tell us now.
And then they sent her home, and I finished the shoot.
Her face was fucked up. Mm-hmm. Her face was fucked up.
No, after that, she became like she really wanted to be my best friend from there on.
She didn't want to get punched again.
It's funny, but yeah, no. Everybody's always respectful. We were like the Brady Bunch.
I was
going to
say for the environment you grew up in as a New Yorker, and the time that you grew up in as a New Yorker. You're very nurturing and not necessarily like, usually there's a hard exterior or a defensive exterior in most New Yorkers I know. Like, I've yet to hear you say, what happened? Or like any Brooklyn sort of terminology that lets me know that you're like, you've been through shit and lived through shit.
Dead ass.
But
dead ass.
Son.
Yeah, that's when I said Keisha comes. That's my middle name. That's when Keisha comes out. You know what I mean?
Wait a minute. Mm-hmm. What is your real name?
My name is Heather Keisha Hunter.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
What made you go into your real name?
My father. He said, "Be proud of your name. You have a powerful name."
So when he found out you were doing porn, what was his reaction?
He was like, he was not shocked. It was more or less, my father always, I could rob a bank, and my dad was like, she's the best bank robber ever. You know what I mean? I could do no wrong in my father's eyes, which was beautiful, because that helped me, you know, along the way.
Yeah.
You know,
was your mother in the picture as well?
Yeah, my mom too. My mom still don't get it. She look at me like, "What did you do?" My mom, she just don't get it. You know, she still don't get it.
Do you have a large family? Do you have cousins?
I have a huge family.
So okay, because you are the creme de la creme of, I mean, your name is pop culture referenced in many of hip hop's rhymes. Is it weird for your cousins or whatever, like, to, like, how?
Well, my sisters, I have to, you know, it's interesting.
There's more of you?
My younger sisters, yeah. Oh, if you saw my younger sister, you'll lose your mind.
Hi, okay.
Yeah, my younger sister, you know, I knew it was going to be hard for them, because they're both beautiful, they're attractive. But what I loved about them, they were raised so strong, good head on their shoulders, that no matter what comes their way, or if somebody was like, oh, you had the hunted sister or something, they really handle it, you know? They never wanted to stray away from it, you know? And then my male cousins, all of them use my name, like, oh, I can get pussy.
Wow.
Yeah, because they think you taught them some things.
Yeah, so it's interesting.
What about all those MCs that you mentioned that you came up with at Latin Quarter? Like, at what point was everybody well receiving of your career, or was anybody like, all right, let me come talk to you in a corner?
You know, I have a few, thank God, I've been the same all my life. Mm-hmm. My character, everything about me, I've never changed. So you have a few people that have thrown off, you know? Definitely a few people were thrown off. But then they got used to it, because I think it came with the respect that I already had within my community, my street, my friends. It was just already there. You know, I really respect people. And
something just hit me right now. Like, literally, when she said that, something hit me. I'm sorry.
It sounded like it.
Wait a minute. I don't know if you know this about me, Heather, uh-huh, but I am probably the third most knowledgeable person of anything Soul Train.
I thought he was going to say porn. That's what it was.
Oh my God, Soul Train.
You danced on Soul Train.
Yeah.
I believe that was you. I was going to say, like, even then, I didn't put two and two together that was you.
Yeah, I was in porn at that time.
Wait.
Wow.
I was going to say, you were a Soul Train dancer as Heather Hunter.
I snuck in on the line. I used my mother's name. So I got online. They let me in. As soon as I was on the floor, I guess because I dance like I'm New York, they were like, oh my God. And the Asian girl with the long hair.
Yes, I love her.
Cheryl Song.
Yeah, she was retiring, and I had long hair. So they immediately threw me up
on
the
stage.
You're the
new one. Right.
Right. So now I'm up on stage. I'm like, oh, this is bad. This is great. Right? And my boy who had the cane, I forgot his name.
Louis.
It took like about five shows for...
I was going to say, you were only on for seven episodes.
Yeah.
What happened?
Eric Kasim, who was the manager, who was the production.
The director. Yeah.
Yeah, he knew after he realized, it's like, oh my God, this is Heather Hunter, you know? And even Louis point to the cane. Oh my God, it's Heather Hunter. So they kind of hid me from Don Cornelius for a while. and they threw me down. Eric kept throwing me down the Soul Train line. Okay, let's get you down the Soul Train line. Let's get you down. We're going to get all these down. And then out of nowhere, someone contacted the Don Cornelius and said that you have a porn star gyrating, twirling down the line.
I bet you it was Pam Brown. It was Pam Brown. It probably had to have been Pam Brown.
Oh, my God.
Pam Brown, she was a hater. She was a...
Wow.
And then Don was like, pulled me to the side when I came back next time. He could not... This is how great this was. Because I would see Don at Stringfellows at the club in L.A. So he's like, who is this girl? How did she get into Stringfellows? I'm there with Marvin Gaye Jr. and all of them. And how is she in here, you know? And then it clicked, and he found out who I was. And then he couldn't, I love Don for this, because he didn't want to tell me that I couldn't be on the show because he thought it was not right to do. You can't do that. You know what I mean?
Ostracize someone.
Yeah.
Right.
So I gave him a break and I did it for him. You know what I mean?
Really?
Yeah, I gave it to him. And then I used to, and then I said, I get it. You know, I'm just happy that I had the experience to actually do this. And he was like, you could still hang and come down. And that was exactly what I would do. I'd go and chill and I would hang out because I worked with Eric as well. And Don was just the coolest. And then about that time, you know, friends, and I had to respect him because, you know, he couldn't do it, you know. He couldn't say, hey, you can't be on Heather. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go. And then we did a porno movie called Get on the Real Soul Train.
Are you serious?
Yeah, as soon as I left Vivid, we just said, okay, come on, we're going to do a movie called Get on the Real Soul Train.
Who was in that? You remember who I was in?
It wasn't me. A train?
It was me, Peter North.
Peter North.
Yeah, it was really good.
Was it a train involved?
No, it's like, I was
spending time. Oh, God, Laia.
Listen.
No, I don't think she means like a choo-choo train.
Yeah, I don't.
I know that, Bill. Make it sure.
No, don't care.
Did you have a no list, Heather? Did you have like a...
Oh, yeah.
Break it down.
Oh,
because...
my no list was not past three people.
Okay.
I think...
Three guys or just three girls and guys? Just
well, I did, no Houston 500
I did
action,
the three guy thing and I didn't... It was just too much. I didn't do anal. I still don't do anal, you know?
Okay. That's why
you
need
that,
clapping.
Ladies. Not even Heather. It's okay. Sorry.
No, you still under.
Yeah, you know. Just really
hey,
traditional
if she wants
stuff.
To do it, she can do
yeah.
it.
Gotcha.
It's up to her. It's up to her.
Being when you were under contract for Vivid at that time, what was the stipulations? Because, I mean, could you dance on Soul Train or could you do, if someone
no,
said, hey,
I could
why don't
do
you do a movie?
I could
like
do
a,
anything.
A real, like a, not a, a pornographic movie, but like a regular movie.
No, I could do anything.
You could do that.
I was just an independent contractor, even though I was on a contract with them. You have to understand, I did six movies a year. We would bang out the six movies in just 1 month. So oh, wow. The whole year, I'm pretty much whatever I want to do. Yeah.
And so for doing six movies in a year, that was enough for you? You could survive off of that financially?
It was adding to the pot of touring.
Yeah, I think you were dancing... Okay.
Yeah, I was touring, so.
Oh, okay. And by touring, you was dancing in clubs and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, the money's sweet. That was hard to give up, you know? Oof. But now I make clean money. I call it clean money. It's not clean money. I call it non-kinky money.
So when you announced your retirement, was it taken seriously by the industry or is it always like, you'll be back? Because...
Most of them do come back.
Cannot get out of the sand trap of that industry.
I
but
did it.
You left for real.
No, I did a Jay-Z. I came
in
back.
Tech.
No, I came
you
back.
You came back?
Yeah, I did a Jay-Z. But no one knew I came back.
I didn't know you came back.
Yeah. I came back and I just privately signed a contract with Vivid and I gave them, I think, four more movies.
Okay.
And then I completely stopped. So it seemed like it was part of the same era when I was doing films, but I just really came back and did a couple of films and I was done.
What was it that made you get out when you got out?
I was done. The HIV, I was done. Yeah. I didn't want to catch anything I couldn't get rid of like that, you know what I mean? Or die, you know?
And then when you made the comeback, what was it that shifted? When you came back that brief time?
Oh, I came back for money, honestly.
Just for the bread.
Yeah, gotcha. I came back because I had a purpose. I wanted, you know, certain things. I was buying a house, and that's when I came back. Is when Tupac passed away. Mm. Tupac told me to come back after I did a How Do You Want It video. Mm-hmm. He convinced me to move back to LA, and a couple of months after that, he passed away. So I was in LA, and I was just like, okay, let me, you know.
What was now? That's the time when I started to visit LA, and L.A. was a hot territory as far as the height of death row. Yeah. Now, again, I mean, if you survive the tunnel, I'm pretty sure that there's no place that you're afraid of.
Right.
You can handle death row if you can survive the tunnel. But, I mean, the environment was still hot out there as far as tension and where hip hop was at the time and beef and all that stuff. What was it like for you to see him pass away? And I know that you two were good friends.
Mm-hmm.
So now that the Tupac film is out, like, what are your feelings about his legacy and what he meant as far as the industry is concerned?
That's a lot of layers. I think, oh man, this is when Tupac always kind of like, I get very, you know? It's unfortunate because when I met Tupac, I met him in New York City, you know? And just like any hip hop artist that I've known that have been dear to me, mm-hmm. by the blessings of, like, I swear it's like angels, there's always like someone looking out for me in any area that something's about to pop off, you know? And the time that I spent with Pac, I never saw him in an environment of hostile. Like, you know, I never saw anything violent or, right. you know. So to see that world when he was not around me, it was like I saw a man that very misunderstood in a sense because people didn't really know him. You know what I mean? There were so many layers to
So him. He was humanized to you.
Yeah.
And human and three-dimensional to you.
Yeah. And even
the caricature, what his...
Yeah, a lot of things are touchy for me, even this movie, you know. I think it's a beautiful thing that they did a Tupac film. But I don't... I think it's too close to home for me, you know what I mean? That I don't, you know, it'll take me a second to watch that film, you know. If you think about the West Coast and East Coast beef, all those years was complete stupidity, honestly. Mm-hmm. And to be part of that history and know that I have full range to go wherever I want, you know? And to see how the East was talking about the West and the West was talking about the East. And I, you know, it's like, it wasn't about where you were from. It was just like, why is this conflict? You know, it's just, it made no sense because even when Biggie passed away, Biggie was in LA,
mm-hmm.
Looking to find property. He was really thinking about staying there, you mm-hmm. know, at least getting a piece of property there, you know? And it's sad that this conflict that was going on, which to me is like guys fighting, little boys fighting in a playground mm-hmm. in sand. You know, it was ridiculous. And to see Tupac pulled from the West to the side of his East history and then from the West and have to, you know what I mean, find his way through that. And to see both of them pass away, it's just, nah, it was just...
Were you friends with Big as well? Were y'all cool?
Yeah, me and Big later down the line, we became friends, you know?
Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm very...
After that video. I said after the video. Like, after the Pac video. How do you want it?
Like, that was almost too close to yeah. Big's death, so...
Right. But it's just sad, you know? I you know, to see hip-hop now and just to see people not really acknowledging history and at least... To me, the new generation.
It's a disposable culture.
Yeah, you know. You know, I really wish that we could turn back time, but it's impossible, you know. So we just got to learn from here and try to educate. Even if they don't want to hear it, you got to push it down and force it down their throat, you know.
So right now, are you indifferent to what hip-hop culture is now? And do any of hip-hop's current luminaries... Do they acknowledge you and your existence, or is it like, what's the environment like for you now? Is it just like, you know?
Well, I'll always be hip hop. I, you know, hip hop inside
well,
me.
Hip hop, what we know as, but I yeah, mean, what they I call hip hop today.
Yeah, like, what they call hip hop today. I think, you know, you have some good stuff. I think back in the day, you had more. Everything about hip hop was wonderful, you know? So now it's like certain people I like, certain people I don't pay attention to. I listen to a lot of old school stuff. I love Kendrick Lamar. I think he's cool, you know? There's really not anybody moving in me unless I hear a song, you know, that goes, hey, this is, who is that, you know?
Right. So you're not Shazamming on your app every 5 seconds, like,
nah,
oh, let me get,
okay. No. I'm a Prince head, you know? Yeah. I really
that's
am.
That's why I love you.
You know? So.
The truth.
And I like music. Honestly, I like music that makes you take your clothes off.
Yes.
So.
Is Prince why the book is named Insatiable?
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
That is one of the.
And there's a character in the book named Martha. From Insatiable. Yeah.
Got a Jones,
man. How many books have you written?
That's what I was about to do.
This is actually my first, but I actually have a whole collector series that's coming out that I'm working with.
Fictional
my
books?
Editor. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because what's interesting is you're writing these books, but then I'm hearing your story when it in regards to hip hop, and it sounds like there's a lane there that you can, I mean, as well as what you're writing. But do you ever think about that, like really going over your life story as far as the hip hop lane and things?
Well, that's the book. You really could read that.
Okay,
it's like a Urban Boogie Nights. It's an LQ is in there.
That's why I was talking about Latin Quarters. Should I look at it?
Yeah,
as
Latin
fiction
Quarters
or
is all up in there.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. So, okay.
Yeah. Speaking of Boogie Nights, how I always now that I have to ask a former porn star to get how authentic is that movie, or like how true to life is it?
That movie was touching.
Word.
Yeah. You know, what I like about that movie, it showed the dark versus always glorifying things. You know what I mean?
You think we glorify it too much as a society?
Now, yeah, to the point that 10-year-old girls are ready to be a porn stars. And they don't understand that. It's like, they're not even born to be that. You know what I mean? Right. It's like we're forcing it on them. And that's where I kind of... I'm really about anything that's adult. I like it in an underworld. I like where we were at, you know?
So you're
I
not
like
for
when it was segregated.
You're not for these apps like the porn hubs, the black...
Only when I'm trying to get off, though.
Tasty Blacks.
Tasty Blacks. You said you're trying to get off?
I said only when I'm trying to get off, though. I'll go to my
but
porn
I think,
hub.
Heather, I think you're on some of those, though. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Once you get your money.
Can you watch yourself?
Yeah.
Really?
But do you watch with a critiqued eye, like...
Oh, I critique porn like crazy.
Where?
Yeah. Even me, yeah.
So what is like? So what is to you? What are staples of bad pornography? Like something that the average viewer would never even know.
I hate when a girl looks in the camera. I hate that.
Okay.
Oh, that bothers me. You know, it's like if you're gonna look in the camera and you look at me while you do, say my name, and if you can't do that, then don't do it. I don't like when you're watching a video. You know, I don't like when the girls look like they're bored, like they look like they're thinking about shopping while the guy is fucking them.
Did his business on me.
See, okay. Yeah. Now you would critique it like we critique music. So it's where you know like someone's phoning in from home or they could have did that verse better or that sort of thing.
Right.
I wouldn't even know what to look for to know that someone's not into it or they're not into it or
shows you because it shows that you know.
Yeah, what are I've the tells? Like, give us some game. Like, how? What are some of the tells that we can see? Okay, she's bullshitting or she's real. Like, she's really enjoying it.
Man,
versus
don't
this
ruin
person
it for me.
Her pussy has to be wet.
Okay,
well, you can't.
But even then,
nobody
can
run in real quick and just
put some there.
But nowadays I know this porn. We've been watching porn, right, baby? We've been watching porn lately.
Oh, Pornhub? You talking about?
Yeah, we've just been watching a lot of porn.
Oh, so just porn.
Okay. Even with the porn, it's like they don't do that anymore. It seems like nobody's using lube. Back in the days, we used to lose a lot of lube, but they're not doing it
anymore. How do you know they're not doing it, though?
Because I've been watching it lately, and I go, okay.
She knows what it looks like.
Yeah.
Oh, because I'm like, can I just pause tape and then edit, you know? And... No,
nah, okay. They're not editing the moves. Nah.
There's no pausing tape. Okay.
Nay.
So, how do you feel about the rise of amateur porn? Like people just, you know, making homemade porn and putting it out there?
That's the porn that honestly I feel is dangerous.
Really?
Just because it's not being regulated health-wise, you know? And that's where I say it's just out of hand now because you got mom and papa companies opening up and no one's really... You know,
yeah, your iPhone is a porn studio.
Yeah, no one's hey, these people should be tested. It's not being, it's enforced. It's not happening, you know? Yeah.
Housewives, parties, Yeah. Yeah, that's a whole category. It's kind
of
crazy.
When you talked about some of like the darker sides of it, like the Boogie Nights address, what were some dark parts for you?
We went down a dark hole.
No, you know, it's too
dark.
It's not about dark. It's just too personal. But put it like this: I was on a set and something happened, and I really didn't understand why no one was so sensitive about it, you know, and I got really upset and I kind of flipped out.
Something happened to you or something happened just to someone else or just on set?
Something happened to me, okay. You know, and
I gotta ask, what can I assume that this is more of a cultural understanding? Because again, I don't know.
Okay, let's be real. I'm gonna be real with you. Could I say it in a way that doesn't sound stinky? I was on set, you know, and I caught my menstruation on set.
Oh.
Okay.
And it was a woman director. And they want to continue doing the scene.
Huh?
Ooh.
And I'm looking at her like, what is wrong with you? Like, everybody looking at me like, I'm crazy. I'm like, I'm bleeding. What is wrong with y'all?
Right.
And I'm looking at all these people like, oh, it's nothing. I'm like, something wrong with y'all people. Clearly something is wrong with y'all. And she didn't, from woman to woman, I thought she would be a little bit more sensitive and a little bit more empathy. And I had to flip
spot
on this.
Her getting the shot. And
it was really, really, you know, and then I was just like, oh, this is really nasty. This is not. But those are like little things that would build up to go, okay, this is not for me anymore. I'm really kind of, I'm taking things too personal now when this is a professional business. You feel me?
When you got out and you were saying earlier that, you know, when you were in porn, you only dated porn stars.
Yeah.
So then when you got out, what was dating like
Ooh.
Then?
I immediately got married. Someone scooped me up and married me.
Yeah. So how long you guys
you
married?
Got married?
Yeah.
Woman? Wow.
Immediately after I got out of porn. I dated him for 6 months and I was married. Yeah.
Oh, and this is your, I mean,
no,
they can't
No,
see.
That was a long time ago.
Oh, okay.
I was 21.
Okay.
So I was only married for a year. Mm. Yeah. Great guy. But
dang, you retired.
I didn't know what I was doing. You know, great man. A credible person. You know, we're best friends to this day.
Gotcha.
But I was just too young. You know, I just got a porn. I've never really had a real relationship before. So I was really... And he was such a good person, a wonderful person. So, you know, things happened too quickly. And I had to really understand the difference between relationships and not being, not in a relationship.
Gotcha.
You know, physically, I was learning my way through relationships because all I was doing before was just performing and having sex, you know?
So then once you guys got divorced and you went, I guess you started dating again.
I started dating
what
again.
What was that like?
It was like getting on a bike and learning how to ride and falling off a couple of times, you know, until you got it right. And, you know, I think even now I'm 47 years old and I got it right 9 years ago. You know, I'm with my man now and I finally could truly say that, you know, I'm really in love and I know the difference between love and lust.
How'd you guys meet?
I hunted him down. I found him. I found him online.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh, that does work good. I'm doing that now, so that's good to know.
Yeah.
It's all right, Heather. You have friends in the room. Cause, you know.
Online dating is not really the thing anymore.
No,
well, I don't think it was like
yeah,
a taboo
like
around
the
90s. It
anymore.
Yeah, it's not 1997.
I was impressed with his talent, so that's how we met.
Impressed with his talent.
You can't just leave that out there like that. You gotta.
Yes, you can. Let it be ambiguous.
Yeah, I'm gonna leave it like that.
Okay.
Is he, you work in the industry as well? Or?
No. Let's leave it like that.
Oh, okay. Now he's at his talent. Damn, like, take it anything. It's online, dude. It's like,
yeah, he's talented.
It could be music. I ain't gonna be a DJ.
Yeah, he's
like,
a singer.
Move
he's a singer.
On, nigga.
You see,
he's a singer.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't me.
Singer.
It was Sponte.
Yeah, so that was Sponte's first one in 90 episodes.
Right.
Anyway,
like,
Heather,
I could like to stroke. How talented
I
kinda is
wanna,
he?
I kind of want to. I don't need to know all that.
I got a question.
Yeah. I thought he might be a DJ or some shit.
So you mentioned that in your you mentioned a minute ago about working with a bad experience working with a woman director. Mm-hmm. How many is it common to see women working behind the camera or not behind the camera, behind the scenes in general in porn? Like, it's not.
No, it's very rare.
Very rare.
Back then, it was very rare. Now, yeah, there's a lot of women that are behind the camera. But back then, that's why I was thrown off. I'm like, yo.
Was that a woman of color that you went through that with? I was just curious.
No.
No, okay.
Well, after your stint in the industry,
but
I believe...
she apologized afterwards, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, all's well, ends well. So after your run, you signed to Tommy Boy Records, I believe?
Yeah. Yeah. Island Records, then Tommy Boy, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what were, at that point, were you trying to figure out, like, okay, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? Were you pursuing passions or, like, what
yeah,
are
just
your...
passions. I'm just
what are you
life.
Passionate about now? Like, what is your... Well, I know that you're deep into art photography, uh-huh. and you, like, what are your passions now that you're pursuing now, your bucket list?
My books, you know, writing, my photography books. I love shooting. So I have the photography business mm-hmm. and my studio. And my documentary is important right now. I'm about to do my documentary. And then the book that you're in mm-hmm. that I have called The Unforgettable, I'm still working on that. So I'm closing out a lot of products right now.
And what's the documentary?
Of my life. Yeah. I'm ready to talk now. I'm actually ready to express myself. I'm a very private person. It's a lot.
And you're directing it yourself?
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of weird. Well, usually...
I'm having someone produce it, but I'm...
Okay, I was going to say, like, just to have another voice in the room and...
Oh, no, I'm having somebody produce it. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. But I'm putting it out as my own production, you know. I told myself, and I said it not too long ago, if I'm going to sell my soul again, I want to sell it to myself. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
You felt like you sold your soul doing porn?
You sell yourself
sold
to
your soul
entertainment.
Every day.
Yeah. Any
form, job.
Everybody sells
any
their soul.
Job.
Form, any, you know?
I sold my soul to Questlove.
Yeah.
And I sold my soul to Pandora.
My soul is not for sale.
I sell
you're
my
fired.
Soul
like,
I don't know.
Transfer her paycheck to
my soul. Like, y'all let me know when the next Illuminati meeting is. So send me the minutes.
That's funny.
When do you plan on wrapping it, and what would the story arc be of your documentary? And how much will you reveal to us in this documentary of your life?
A lot.
Okay.
Especially for someone who doesn't talk. So, you know.
You're not talkative?
There's a lot of...
So you're doing me a solid right now.
Oh. Or she's just not saying
no,
a lot.
I don't even do that many interviews, you know, anymore.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
No, I feel, whenever I feel comfortable and it's a vibe, I do those type of interviews. You
I
know?
Feel honored.
And I, yeah, there's so much about me. I hold so much inside me of so many people's lives, even my own, you know. But and there's so much respect that I have for people, but then there's things that I can share and I could talk about, experiences I know that could help somebody else, someone can relate to, you know. And just so I could really get tired of people asking me about Tupac, you know. Mm-hmm. So I could really kind of touch a little bit closer on how I feel and just things, you know.
Did you ever have any children?
No.
You have any children? No children.
I have a stepson right now, though.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
Anything like you that you, I knew.
I don't think it would be, I have other questions, but I don't think it'd be appropriate. I just would.
Just ask the questions.
Right.
Wow. She's self-policing herself. That's amazing.
I am, because also I respect the fact that you've moved on and you've been retired for 28
years. Yeah, but
years.
I talk about, you know.
So we can talk about like fucking.
Oh,
stuff.
Let's, yeah. Let's okay. fuck. Let's fuck. Let's fuck.
Can
let's
this be all like, let's fuck. Like, nah, girl. Y'all gonna have to exchange numbers.
Can we talk, what about if we keep it on blowjob?
My mama's listening to this show.
Miss Jackie is not listening to this episode. Miss Jackie, turn it off real quick, Miss Jackie. Hold on. Or Miss Jackie, keep it on, but tell Amir that you turn it off. Okay. I was going to ask you about the evolution because you talked about blowjobs.
Oh my God. Go in.
I just, okay. And so I just wanted to know, I wanted to get advice first. And it was interesting to me in the evolution of the blowjob, right? I know Superhead. And Superhead was a big. I don't know if you remember, but the two handed thing or whatever. But I just wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, I always thought she should have been Super Hands rather than Superhead.
And how did you feel about that? Because she did use both hands, but she was called Superhead. You know what I mean? I don't know if you ever.
I actually never watched her get head.
Yes, exactly. Really? Like I think once she left it, it's like you also.
No, she said she's been watching porn the whole time.
Yeah, but I just Superhead wasn't porn. You know, she was just a girl who just gave head. So. I didn't really look at her as a porno star, you know?
Do you have any new girls that you like, or new guys or girls that you like now?
I like Missy Stone.
Yeah, okay.
I really like her, because I like when a girl is just bouncing, having a good time, and just look like she's enjoying that dick.
She seems cool.
You know?
Yeah. She seems cool.
I was going to ask you, like, favorite position, situation that you like to watch.
Yeah, I like doggy.
Okay.
Even now with the, you were talking about the double hand.
Double
thing.
Hand, yeah.
Yeah, but even this way, even double hand, it's just, that's so traditional. That's why it threw me off that was like a big, you know.
What is non-traditional, Heather? What is non-traditional?
Non-traditional is just a regular stroke, but to me, that's, I guess, I don't know. It's just.
What's alternative?
To me, it's about suction.
Okay.
It's like if a woman could really create her mouth as a penis pump, then she's learned her technique.
I'm sorry, I had to take that in.
Okay.
Words of wisdom.
Words of wisdom.
Thinking about something else.
Here's another question. Is there something that you, because this is, man, I wish you could really just advise and write a book on a list of things. Is there something for the blowjob outside of your own natural hands, mouth, or whatever that you would advise to help get results? You know, some people, okay, I know this might sound antiquated, you know, but I'm going to go Altoid. I'm going to go ice. I'm going to go, you
pop
know.
Pop rocks.
Whoa.
Pop rocks.
I don't know about pop. I
don't really?
Pop rocks. Okay. That was Bill. I didn't say pop rocks.
Yeah. Pop rocks in the mouth.
But since we're on the blowjob.
We call it the 4th of July.
Is that a crazy question, Heather? That was crazy.
No, just ask the question. Like, just ask the question.
I did. I said.
So what do you use other than your?
Yes. Are there other things that you can advise to help with the
America,
with the results?
Come on.
My. No.
A tongue roll.
She has me stuck. I feel like I have one in my mouth right now.
I know. I'm like, a tongue roll. Because, see, I learned that the tongue ring is not a guaranteed win. I had one in college. That's really more of a male. A
you
male
had
should,
no goddamn tongue ring
I
in
did.
College.
You wasn't looking in my mouth.
That shit. What, for 3 days?
No, I had it for like 2 years.
Oh, God.
I had a tongue ring. But, I mean, it's not for
the
a woman.
I don't even think it's about what you use. Pouring lube in your mouth is a great thing. But I really think it's very important to think of your mouth as your vagina.
Thank you.
And if you could master that, then you're giving the best head possible, you know? And I have to go back to being a good girl now because my man is in here and I'm, you know.
I'm trying to figure out how to make my mouth Kegel. How do you make your mouth Kegel?
The look
on the boss man's face right
look,
now.
I'm taking over right now. I'm taking over my own show. Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes, because I know you got some sense, Bill.
It is actually kind of warm in here right now. We briefly touched on your music career, and I think we should get back to that. Your first releases were house music, right?
House music, yeah.
But why didn't you start out with hip hop? Yeah.
At that time, I was really passionate in house because I was hanging out in most of the house clubs.
Okay.
And, yeah, I was performing. And then Cookie Gonzalez came and saw my performance at Red Zone. And then I got a record deal. And then we figured at that time, house music was big, you know, dance music. And I did really good with that track. I hit the Billboard charts with that one. And where I left Island after I toured, I went to Tommy Boy Records, and that's where they messed up at me. Because they were trying to turn me into like Mary J. Blige, and I really wasn't that. And they really should have had me do hip-hop at that time. And I got put on the shelf, and they gave me all the rights to my music, and I left Tommy Boy. Mm. And then I decided to put out my own album because me and Akineli, actually Akineli taught me how to rhyme.
Okay.
Wow.
And me and him was on tour before me putting out the album for like a year. He's doing Put It in the Mouth. I'm rhyming to an MOP track, and that was our show. And we had strippers and midgets. It was Oh My. And we toured for like
what?
A year.
Nice.
Yes. Was that before you did the Primo joint, or was that that same album?
That was before.
Okay.
And then we
wait, she did a Primo joint?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn.
I thought
wait, you said that like.
No, I thought you were
like. Wait, you didn't know me? I did not know.
I found out about your website, so I figured that you probably would have seen that.
Oh, man, no, bus.
I remember when it came out, because you shot a video for that one, right? You guys shot a
video? We shot a video for the So Serious, So Sincere.
Okay, I think, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, I...
Did he scratch in this industry of rap? In
the it was called Freak Like Me.
In this industry of porn.
I'm sorry, Primo. I always tease him about.
And that's my boy from back in LQ. So I had a lot of people, all my friends were supportive. They really wanted to see me do something different with my life. So whenever I want to do something, everybody like, come on, let's do it.
That's dope.
So that's how I kind of have been very successful as well.
And blessed.
Because I've gotten a lot of support from a lot of my friends that are hip-hop pioneers, artists, everything, you know?
Was mainstream film something you ever wanted to do, or...?
I did a couple. I just made sure I was in ones that I really wanted to be in. I did American Gangster.
But, like, you didn't have any... You didn't have no desire to be, like, you know, the next...
No.
Okay.
No.
What advice would you give, or pointers would you give to any girl porn stars now that are looking to transition and get out the game, which is something that you seem to have done really well. But
well, you have to give it up completely. You can't do both. It's impossible. Because they were telling me that, you know, I was trying, and then I got it. I realized, I said, okay, maybe I have to stop all the way completely to really be taken serious. Mm-hmm. But then at the same time, I'm still expressing myself in a, you know, an erotic way in everything I do. So you just got to be real with yourself. It's just like, and... You got to really, I talk to many girls, they be like, I want to do this, I want to change my life. But the same day, they still swinging on a pole, they ain't going nowhere, you know? So it's really something that you really want to change it, you got to stick to it. And you got to really strip yourself from that money to learn how to make a totally different type of kind of money. It's a lot, you really got to strip down. Because I literally stripped down from the porn, from touring, stripping, all that. I had to give that up.
So when you stop everything. It wasn't just the movies.
When to walk away.
Yeah.
I had to stop because I knew there was nothing going to change if I didn't. And then thank God, you know, family, friends, I just have a good support system. You know, I'm good to people, so it's a blessing that they're good to me, you know?
It would be dope to see you get back in the talk show game. Do you ever think
about
it?
Well, I'm going to do a radio. I'm going to do a podcast show
soon. Sorry. I thought like, he was about to be like.
Yeah. Go back to
all that shit you said. Get back in.
No.
Yeah, I'm thinking about doing a podcast. That's dope. I get up and I just thank God, blessing. And I'm so appreciative that I can get up and just be myself and figure out what I'm going to do the next day. You know, I'm at that point in life where nothing really... I think the older I've gotten, even just more success and just changed. And I just don't really sweat. I just kind of enjoy life because, you know, I'm learning as you lose people, there's a lot of people dying, you know. You realize you just got to enjoy every minute. So whatever I'm going to do, hopefully people like it. If they don't, I don't care because I'm happy. You know what I mean? So
just maybe we might have our seventh member of the Team Supreme. Anyway,
hey, now.
Heather Hunter, I want to thank you for everything, for talking to us.
I adored you. Can I just say something?
Yes.
When I saw you at Brooklyn Bowl.
Yes.
I thought it was adorable because I was with my my security guy. And he was like, what are you doing? You going straight up to the DJ booth? What are you doing? I'm going to say hello. What are you doing? He's not going to know you? What are you going to do?
So he's not going to know you.
And then I pointed.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Clef was there.
And I pointed on him. And at first he was like, who is? And he went, oh, it's Heather. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I met you years ago. I don't know if you remember with Scott in Philly when you were in the studio.
You worked with Scott.
I forgot that Scott was...
Yeah.
I forgot Scott was in my group.
Right?
I'm like, Scott who?
Oh, he was just
Okay.
Scott Bayo.
So wow. It was really good. That's why when he was like, Heather, I said, no, I know him from, you know. So it was really a pleasure. I'm glad you wanted me to come over here because this was fun.
It's
always good to talk about Latin Quarters. That was life.
Well, I thank you. Yeah. Is there anything that you've learned this episode, Bill? I'm going to save Laia for last.
I learned Laia is a closet freak.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't even think it's closet.
I want to be better, though.
Just own it. Let it out.
Just looking for a suitor. So.
Okay. Fontigolo. All right, we're going to find, we got to have a fine Laia and and unpaid Bill.
He's good.
He's good.
Oh, damn.
It's all me.
He's back on the bandwagon. Fontigolo, what did you learn?
I guess I've just learned, you know, you just kind of, you know, just hearing what Heather's story, just the thing about just listening to yourself and just kind of knowing when it's time to walk away.
Right.
Like when something just ain't, if it's not feeding you no more, and if it's not, you just feel like, nah, I'm past this. And then also, I guess, giving yourself permission to say that I can do something else. I think it's a lot of people, you feel like, okay, well, if I'm known as this, then there's no way I'm ever going to be known as something else.
Mm-hmm.
But it really ain't got nothing to do with other people. It really is about you giving yourself that permission to say, nah, I can do what the fuck I want to do. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It really is.
And you know how crazy this world is now. So just got to be proud of who you are. Because I'm proud of every aspect of who I am.
Sugar
even
Steve.
The good and the bad.
Hold on. Amir, she's really a big Prince fan. There's a chapter in this book called Erotic City.
I'm a huge Prince fan.
Yes, you are. You ever get to meet him?
Yeah, I'm saving that story.
Okay. Oh, no.
I guess it wasn't married Jehovah Witness.
In the book.
Oh.
Yeah, that's going in my doc. That's going in my documentary.
Okay. Would you like to witness?
But he's truly my...
Sugar Steve. Dalmatian Steve, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No,
I mean, you're really lovely and cool.
Oh, thank you.
I found it interesting that the nicest person she met in her life was named Goldberg. I learned that talking about blowjobs with Lighty in the room was as disappointing as I thought it was going to be.
But you didn't say nothing. You could have said something.
And I have one question. So if you were on 43, I was on 23. If I heard you were having a party and I came up and heard the music and knocked on the door, would you have let me in?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, shit.
Yeah.
No, everybody was coming. People were coming from different floors.
Yeah. I'm just kidding.
Except for Steve.
Yeah.
Okay, Laia.
I have nothing raunchy. I learned a few things. I was going to say, number one, I learned that it's dope that if you are a dope individual and you demand respect, you will continue to get it. Because I just think that's amazing that all those men, those MCs, no matter what you did, respected what you did and respected who you were as a person. Also, I thought it was dope that you've done like 20,000 things. So I've learned that let's try to do as much as we think that we can, because you never know what you can and cannot do. And I learned to use my mouth as a coochie. So
yes, this is the most.
My mouth.
You should have known that by now.
I've learned that we can never let Lightyear get the last goddamn word on my show. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Lightyear, who might be back next time or might not, Sugar Steve on the 43rd floor or the 23rd floor, who knows? Boss Bill, Fontigolo, Unpaid Bill, and Heather Hunter. This is Questlove signing off. We will hopefully see you on the next go-round.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. This classic episode was produced by the team at Pandora.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.